Hello and welcome to Piece by Piece, the podcast where we piece together what makes a world without violence. While we don't always see it, gender-based violence is all around us. At Anova, we believe in a future without violence. But what does a future without violence look like, and how do we get there? My name is Dr. Annalise Trudell, and I'm your host. This week's episode, Destigmatizing Abortion, Why Access is So Important, and What an Abortion Actually Entails. So abortion's been legal in Canada for more than 30 years, and yet, for some strange reasons, it is still incredibly taboo both to talk about and to live through. So today I have on Robin Schwartz, who's a local activist for reproductive justice in Southwest Ontario, an abortion doula, and a feminist researcher. And we want to talk about, you know, what is the history of abortion in Canada, both access and rights. We then also talk about what is it like to go through an abortion. We want to inform individuals who are going to experience it or who are going to walk alongside somebody who is, what it will entail so that they can go into that situation from an informed vantage point. Finally, we're going to link why reproductive justice is connected to ending gender-based violence. That's a lot of packing in there for 30 minutes, so give it a listen. A quick content warning. Not only do we talk about abortion, but we also talk about pregnancy loss and miscarriage. Hi, Robin. You've been high on my list of having you on the podcast, both because you're just kind of a superstar and you are so informed on this topic. So I'm happy to have you here.
Thanks so much, Annalise. I'm really, really happy to be here, genuinely, and a big fan of you and Anova's work. So thank you for having me.
That's lovely. Okay, so we want to get really practical in this conversation today. So I want us to sort of go through a few different steps. I want you to actually set the stage about abortion. It's sort of, in some ways, still an incredibly taboo topic in sort of, frankly, weird ways. Like in some ways it feels really normalized, but in a lot of ways it's not. So what is, you know, the current law in Canada? How many folks actually engage in sort of the use of abortion? And what are some of the issue areas? That's a lot. I'm hoping you cover it in about 5 minutes. So best of luck, because then I want to actually get to the sort of actual sort of informed decision-making of, say you have a friend that might be considering an abortion. What is it actually like? Because yeah. I think there's a lot of talk about the politics of it, which is incredibly important, but perhaps not as grounded in what it actually is like and what it actually is not like.
Yeah, I think that that's a really great and a good place for us to start is a place that I think most women in Canada will remember, and that's 1988 with the Morgenthaler decision. So most people who are older than me, and I say that sincerely because one of my favorite lines as an activist is, I've never lived in a Canada where abortion was illegal, because I was born in 1989. And so 1988 represents the culmination of several decades of activist work to overturn what was seen as an unfair abortion law. In 1969, then Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau puts in place the new omnibus bill. Folks will be familiar with this because it also deals with homosexuality in terms of there's some changes to those laws. I don't like saying decriminalized because, and I'm sure you've had other folks on to talk about this, like it's very, this new omnibus bill really is done as a way to protect folks in power to deal with these sort of stigmatized issues like abortion, like homosexuality. And so with abortion, what happens is they set up what is called therapeutic abortion committees across Canada. And these are a group of about three doctors, but we don't actually know what they all look like because every single hospital across Canada is able to do this differently. They can choose whether or not they want to do them, even though the law says they're supposed to. And so essentially, depending on where you live, you are forced to stand in front of a group of men and convince them that you deserve to end your pregnancy. That is what the law is after 1969. And so activists across Canada spend the next 20 years, and Dr. Henry Morgenthaler is a part of that work, trying to overturn that law because they believe and they know that abortion is healthcare. And so that story I always like to start with, because it is in contrast to what is happening in the US. And I know that's probably part of why we're also talking now, where they go for the courts first. In Canada, they start by organizing in terms of helping all Canadians understand that abortion is healthcare and that it is something that no matter what, people will need access to in their communities. And then eventually they go for the Supreme Court in the 80s. And in 1988, alongside Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, a group of women through the Ontario Coalition of Abortion Clinics overturns that law. And so what that means is that in Canada, sometimes the anti-abortion movement will say things like Canada has no abortion laws. For folks in London, you will remember there was a bus ad like that that was around. That was one of the first things I did in the city as an activist, was work to get rid of that bus ad, because that's technically not true. Canada has a negative law. That law was overturned because it was in violation of our bodily autonomy as outlined in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And therefore, since 1988, Canada is one of the only countries in the world that does not have a restriction on abortion based on whatever patriarchal ideas in medicine you want to float around. Because the other piece of this that I think is really important for folks to understand is that prior to the 1920s, abortion was not stigmatized. It was prior, after what's called the quickening, so after you can feel the fetus move. But forever, for as long as human history has existed, pregnant people have ended pregnancies that they did not want or could not have for whatever reason that was personal. And so it was a part of the eugenics movement to start to tell women, and it was male OB-GYNs who began in the 1930s and 1920s and 30s in Canada in particular, to tell middle and upper class women that if you have abortions, it is wrong, and that pregnancy begins at conception, which that life begins at conception. And so essentially that what happens, and this is in Canada where Morgenthaler understands this, knows this history, sees it, alongside a whole slew of other women and activists from across the country who stand in solidarity together and get this law overturned. And so essentially what makes abortion in Canada different than any other country is that we actually treat it the same as like brain surgery or heart surgery or any other type of pregnancy loss or pregnancy support. It is just a part of our healthcare system. It is governed by doctors. So the Society of Gynecologists in Canada has specific guidelines. It's not like abortion is one of the most regulated procedures within the medical community in Canada. And we'll get into in a second why that then creates barriers. But essentially, legally, it is treated the same as any other thing that exists within our medical system. And so in that way, after 1988, we are essentially told, oh, Canada's pro-choice. Oh, abortion is available. And so like you, when I started doing this work, I genuinely grew up believing that this was over and that abortion was everywhere and that it was an easy thing. And it was just part of our healthcare system, even though we also saw a lot of anti-choicers coming out of the woodworks in the 90s and bombing various abortion clinics and things, which is part of why I think there's still so much stigma. But essentially, it should be available in every hospital across Canada, and it should be easy to access. It is not. And we can go into kind of how that happens here, because Morgenthaler does his best to train as many people as possible, but he is one man, and one man cannot create access.
Absolutely. Okay. So there was so much you just said, which I feel like so many different pieces could be their own podcast episode. But what really sort of resonated through that, thank you for the history of that, because history provides the context of these are not just naturalized ways of thinking, that they're political and when they sort of got to the fore. But what was interesting to me is that Canada really positions this as another form of healthcare. And so who governs healthcare? The societies that govern doctors, and that is where the expertise should lie. And that's what the law reflects, rather than making this sort of a hyper-politicized although it is, sort of approach. So thank you. And thank you for really helping tease out that we do have a law. It's just, it's in the semantics of that. So, I don't know if you have these offhand, Robin, but like, how common is the use of abortion by folks in Canada?
So the honest answer is that this is where I get into why there are challenges. We don't actually know for 100% sure. A lot of our statistics are actually ones that we adopt from the U.S. in order to talk about this. So the Guttmacher Institute in the U.S. does track there how many abortions there are, and the most recent statistic that came out was 1 in 4 pregnant people will have an abortion in their lifetime. Saying that, in Canada, because the way that data is tracked in our healthcare is so disparate, we do not have a like actual number of people who had abortions in Canada last year, because so the National Abortion Federation, who are really great, and they are the doctors, they're basically and working hard to train more providers. They have a network of clinics, but if you are not connected to NAF, which is a choice, you can choose as a hospital to say, we're not going to work with them. You don't have to report to them for your numbers. Medication abortion, which we will talk about in a second, has only been available in Canada really since 2017, but like it's still iffy in terms of the amount of information, whether or not certain pharmacies will carry the pill. Like there's lots of just like barriers put in place by other primary care providers, other healthcare providers like pharmacists, like the guy at the hospital who answers the phone. Like, and so those numbers are very hard to come by here in the same way that like we don't have really good race-based data in Canada, right? Like data in Canada for healthcare is a significant challenge because we're not sharing information through a centralized system. And you and I both know in Ontario, like since the pandemic hit, things have gotten so bad where we are not sharing information. Like essentially a lot of the providers have just had to keep going in terms of providing care rather than being able to do their numbers and things. Right. And so I wouldn't be surprised if like there was conversations in some of the meetings that I was in with abortion providers in the early days of the pandemic about numbers going down, but that was not the case at certain places. And so it was really what I was seeing as an activist and as an abortion doula was providers who were older, not really understanding why folks weren't coming to downtown Toronto. And those of us in the rural areas being like, yo, we have people here who are being forced to carry pregnancies because they can't get access to your services and you're not helping them get to you. Like if someone doesn't have a car, they can't get to your clinic. And so, yeah, that's a very long answer to say, I wish we had an actual number. Mm-hmm. I also wish we had an actual number of providers. A lot of providers are still, particularly in rural areas, scared to say, I do abortions. So I know there's a hospital in Ontario. I can't obviously say which one because of my confidentiality that like will not publicly say they do it. And so that means that we get repeated calls from that community on the National Access Line where I'm a volunteer through Action Canada, where essentially like that is labor that is being done by a volunteer that should be easy in the community. Like you, if you live in London, you should know that the abortions are available in London, and most Londoners don't.
Yes. And okay, so that was the national line that you can call mm-hmm. by Action Canada.
Yes.
Will navigate where to sort of have your entry point. But there's like, as you've beautifully, very quickly fleshed out, there's total disparity in access. And that should not be the case. I do want to sort of go in. So say mm-hmm. you figure out where in your jurisdiction you might be able to access it. Mm-hmm. So using London, that would be LHSC, presumably. Yeah. But can you just take a step back for a second? What actually all counts as abortion?
Well, so, and this is where it's really like on hospital administrators in terms of how they treat people and their bodies, because I know, for example, at Victoria Hospital, that if you are there for a miscarriage, I don't believe you go to the same floor as if you are there for a termination. And that is extremely problematic, in my opinion, because it is the same, all pregnancy loss is pregnancy loss. Whether it the choice to get an abortion is so personal. And I've written about mine in one setting, but it took me a really long time to even come out publicly and say that. I was at Western doing significant work for 3 years before I even felt publicly safe to say it. And it was actually because of the pandemic and because I was no longer at Western accepting a paycheck from Western that I felt comfortable coming out and saying I had had an abortion, because I was concerned, even as someone with this much privilege, about my economic security and just harassment in the community. Right. So essentially, a lot of hospitals in Canada, and I know this is true with Grand River Hospital, where I am in Kitchener now as well, divide what they would call a natural miscarriage, which again is a problematic word in pregnancy at all. What does it mean to be natural? The idea that someone having a C-section that they cannot choose because they have twins is not a natural birth is the most upsetting thing that anyone could possibly say to a pregnant person, right? It's all about informed consent and you actually being empowered to choose things for yourself. But yeah, oftentimes where the abortions that quote people are choosing, which again, what is choice? If I am 21 in Scotland and have no economic way of caring for a child, and I'm not really sure if the person I'm with is going to be who I'm going to be with for the rest of my life, why should I continue that pregnancy? And I know, I think about students at Western all the time with that. Having a child is a big deal, and supporting kids in our community is not something we do very well. There is not good access to childcare. There is not good housing right now. It's really hard to be a pregnant person. And oftentimes, yeah, stigma is reinforced by the fact that there are abortion providers and then there are gynecologists. And even within that field, they are reinforcing who does that and who doesn't, because of the various gatekeepers within medicine.
Right. And so this has been an interesting point for me. I went through a miscarriage about a year ago, and it was really eye-opening because, medically speaking, very similar processes are on the table. So either it's medically navigated in terms of drug use, or there's a DNC. God forbid, I forget what that stands for, but
dilation and oh my gosh, I also always forget this, which this is why I prefer not using medicalized terms for things. I would really love it if someone could come up with something better, but it's dilation and suretion. I can't remember. It's
it doesn't matter. But yeah, the point is, it's a surgery.
Very, very mild surgery. And I think that's also important for folks to understand. London does up to the gestational limit around abortion, which is a different procedure. After 15 weeks, it does become more risky for the pregnant person. And that is true of any medical procedure, right? These are not just abortion things. There are specialized heart surgeons versus just right. There's different levels of specialty within medicine. And so before a certain gestation, it's just very gentle suction. It is so quick. It is the least invasive surgery that there is, as in I know from reading evidence-based things about outcomes for abortions that it's actually better to have them outside of hospital settings. And that's one of the things that I don't think Canada has done a very good job of at all, which is normalizing it to the point where you and I could go to a birth center in London and do all of this there and have it be this beautiful intersectional reproductive experience, whether it's people getting IUDs or midwives or miscarriages, like all of those things are connected. But like you said, like Mifugai Miso, which is Mifepristone and Misoprostol, like Misoprostol is the same thing you give someone with a miscarriage. Every single family doctor in the country knows how to do that. And yet most of them will still not prescribe Mifugai Miso because they believe that they can't do that.
Right.
It's the exact same drug.
Right. And so perhaps they're bringing in an ethical conversation and fine, but not like, this is really about access to sort of healthcare that is sort of a basic need. And we're not actually going to debate pro-choice on this conversation today, because that's a whole other kettle of fish, but we are both aligned in pro-choice and we're both aligned in having access to sort of things that our bodies need to feel safe and good. And so I just want to come back to those, like, it's totally unfair to say two streams, but let's just go with it for a second. Mm-hmm. So say I have decided that I do not want to carry the pregnancy that I have to term. And I call Action Canada to figure out sort of where I can access what it is. What will it be like if I take the drug and then sent home to take that drug? And then let's do a quick DNC. You already sort of mentioned that it was very, very gentle, but let's start with the drug.
Yeah, with Mifugai Miso. So I actually, the other resource I just want to make sure gets thrown in here is choiceconnect.ca. I was the project manager for that launch, and it is a app that was created by Shore Center, which is the Planned Parenthood in Kitchener-Waterloo, to basically get through like all of, essentially make it so that you don't have to call a phone number. Because I think that, and the reason I want to emphasize this is I know a lot of folks don't like talking on the phone, particularly young women. And so you can go to that website and then make phone calls from there rather than having to call us. But so you will be referred to either your family doctor or a nearby medication abortion provider, which in London is London Health Sciences. In Kitchener, it's Shore Center. So like the nonprofit does it. And essentially after usually some blood work and possibly an ultrasound, depending on what the doctor feels makes the most sense, that's been something that through the pandemic has come off. Prior to the pandemic, essentially you had to have an ultrasound, which was a barrier because oftentimes, so this is for folks who are less than 9 weeks gestation, you sometimes can't even see anything at that point. And so it again is this like not evidence-based practice that was put on when this drug was legalized by Health Canada. But essentially you'll then be sent home with a box of pills. And you take the first pill and then you take the second one 48 to 72 hours later. And that will cause the first one essentially stops the pregnancy from growing. The second one causes your uterus to contract and release anything. So just blood, like it's a very heavy period. And then essentially you will, over the course of several weeks, several months, everyone's body's different, go back to what ever normal cycle is for you. And I always say that in quotes because everyone is different. And usually there's follow-up blood work as well to make sure that they're essentially measuring your hormones to make sure that the pregnancy has stopped. And so that's why they will have you do that like right before and right after. And again, depending on where you are, if you're in a rural setting, like all of these things can be barriers depending on how accessible these pieces of care are for you.
And so that you had mentioned is under 9 weeks as sort of an option on the table. And you've been really clear in saying everyone's bodies are different, and that's of course true. And I think sometimes it's helpful to just hear that normalized, like, so that was the medication that I was on to manage my miscarriage. And, you know, it was a very, very heavy period, had to stay sort of close to home for a couple of days, but really able to manage that. And so just wanting to bring some sense of sort of normalizing what that is. Of course, there's variation to that effect, but I think sometimes there's like a scariness to it. And I know, you know, I'm going to be really gentle in saying this. And, but sometimes for me, at least, there was also a worry of like, what am I going to see? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may see tissue, you may not. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of all sort of variant, but it's okay.
Yeah. And I think, so I will say, I know Shore actually, if anyone's listening is like, oh my gosh, this is so much, Shore offers free pre-pregnancy counseling online. So if anyone is listening and is like, I need to talk to someone because this conversation is triggering me, please like reach out to Shore Center. Kayla would love to help you. That's like really, really important. And they're one of the only places in Canada that offers that for free. So we're really lucky in on Southwestern Ontario to have them. But yeah, it is scary. And I think, like, I know from my experience of even having my abortion, and I had the other one we're going to talk about, the DNC where base or DNS, where essentially I think I was 8 weeks. And so, I had it at a hospital. I was put fully under. That's not usually the case in Canada. You're like, you will have some sort of pain relief, but you will be like, it's a mild sedation. I was in Scotland, so they put me entirely under. But essentially, I shared those experiences, Annalise, of just being like, oh my God, like, am I going to see something in my underwear after? Am I going to see this? And the honest answer is probably no. And that's, again, like, everyone's experience is different, but the truth is that, like, pregnancy before 20 weeks is so, like, it is so small, and a lot of our understanding of that has actually been warped by the anti-abortion movement. Yeah. And the ways in which ultrasounds have been weaponized against us, in that, like, there is a direct tie between the rise of ultrasound technology and the rise of the anti-choice movement, using those images to make pregnant people not trust what we all have always known in our bodies about what we needed, and the ways in which that experience can also be a really emotional thing in terms of, like, pregnancy loss is hard no matter what it is, right? Like, it's not, being pregnant is a difficult thing. It is transformative no matter what the outcome. And that is one of the things that we as people with uteruses carry with us. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just a fact of life. And I wish that we would talk about it that way, in terms of, like, beautifully supporting each other and making it not easy, but just like when people have cancer, we come around them, we gather, there's special centers for them to go to, and they're really nice. And that's not the experience with pregnancy in Canada. It's become mm-hmm. so medicalized, especially with the pandemic and the lack of, like, support people who are allowed to go in, just all of those pieces. And that's been true with abortion for a long time.
Well, and what's been important to me, and I reflected on it before our conversation today, and I do want to get to the DNC, yeah. but is that I wanted to bring forward parts of my miscarriage, not to make it the center of focus, but because it is all part of having, like, a uterus and having a say over what happens to our bodies, or not at times having that say, and that being a trauma in a moment. And that is also why this is connected to mission for ANOVA, right? Is that to have violence and abuse perpetrated against you is not having consented to something happening to your body, and not being able to navigate what happens to your body in terms of a pregnancy, ending of a pregnancy, the trauma of a miscarriage. Those are all connected mm-hmm. In that same space. But I want to get to the more surgical route. So mm-hmm. if you're over 9 weeks, this is the route that will be chosen, but also could be under 9 weeks. What do we know about it?
Yeah. So basically there's actually a couple of different procedures in there, and I don't like using medical jargon to talk about this stuff. So I'm going to do it in, like, the way that I understand it in my head. Essentially up to 15 weeks ish, it's a very gentle section. And so what you would have happen, it depends on which hospital you're at. At London, you have to come in for a pre-assessment. That's something, if anyone from London Health Sciences is listening, Would love it if you got rid of that. It shouldn't be two different days. It's a barrier for folks, especially people coming from outside the community. Because for folks who don't know, Lennon Health Sciences is, in my opinion, probably the most important abortion provider in Canada. And so that gets into the next procedure, which again, regardless, your experience going into it is going to look the same. So you're going to talk to someone first. They're going to make sure that you're okay. They're going to explain these things to you and also give you times that you need to come for the actual surgery days. But if you are later in term, so after 15 weeks up to 24 weeks, which is the gestational limit in Canada, which we are working on, you will be coming in for possibly a 2-day procedure where you come in the night before and have what's called laminaria inserted into your vaginal canal and cervix. And laminaria is seaweed, actually. So it essentially is opening the cervix. And that's the difference between the earlier version of it and the later, is that as you get further along in pregnancy, the cervix is starting to close up. And so we can't just go in with gentle suction. They also have to go in with forceps. And that's where Lennon has several doctors who are highly specialized, and Lennon is known throughout the world, in fact, for training folks like that, because Dr. Fraser Fellows, who was the doctor for many years there and actually inserted my second last IUD as a retired OB, he has always been someone who's seen the value of this in the city. And so as a result, we are one of four places in Canada that offers that later procedure. And so there are folks from across Canada, but particularly the Maritimes, who are constantly flying to Lennon, Ontario, in order to get that, because in their home communities, it goes up to say 15 or 16 or 20. And you know, from having gone through a full pregnancy, that around 20 weeks is when those highly important tests happen, where you might find out something bad is wrong with the fetus and have to make one of those really hard decisions. And that is something that people only can get in Lennon, in terms, it's Lennon, Toronto, Vancouver. And then I believe there's also one in Quebec, but Quebec's system, as folks know, is separate kind of from ours. Like, it is and it isn't. And so it's harder for people with that.
And so sort of above 20 weeks is way less access.
Yes.
And then in terms of the actual process, a little bit more, like there's forceps involved. There's a little bit more specialization, just like there would be in, as you have so beautifully said, in any sort of medical space, this is a little more specialized, but in terms of what you'll experience, that will be a little more invasive.
Well, and it's one of those things where, like, the number of abortions happening, again, I don't have an exact number, but like, we know that those procedures are so few.
Right.
And that's part of why policymakers will often say, well, why does this need to be everywhere? It's not like you need to travel for, say, like, I know Lennon is a hub for so many things across southwestern Ontario. And I would say, well, why do you not believe that people deserve access to healthcare in their own community? And that's right. True of everything. Like, I'm not just talking about abortion here. Like, we, and that's something I think, abortion can be kind of used to talk about lots of various things, whether it's access to midwifery, access to even IUD insertions. Like, the number of people who have to travel outside their home community for that in 2022 is ridiculous.
Right.
But I do want to just point out and highlight, and this is where most Canadians don't know this, but I just said 24. Well, there are people who need access to abortion after 24 weeks. Things happen. And currently, I know that there is a hospital in Toronto that is providing it sometimes, but it is one provider. So usually when people call us on the access line for this, we have to help them get to the United States for care. So if you are after 23 weeks and 6 days in this country, you are probably flying to see a doctor named Dr. Hearn in Boulder, Colorado, who is one of the nicest, most incredible people I've ever. I was supposed to meet him actually during, at the beginning of the pandemic, but then the pandemic started. He is over 80. His best friend was Dr. George Tiller, who was the last abortion provider shot in the United States. And he is still doing this because he is one of the only people in the world who has the specialized skills to be able to perform those later term abortions. So in that, like, it is super highly specialized after 24 weeks. Like, that's why it's not available. It's not because of, like, stigma's part of it in that, like, why are we not getting more people to train? And I've been saying for 5 years, like, start just sending folks to this man. Like, what's going on? Like, why are we not just all going around him and making sure we know what he's doing? Because he's been doing this forever. And so he has these specialized surgical skills like Dr. Morgenthaler that no one else in the world has. And we might lose those because of the stigma.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but that was incredibly helpful, Robin, to sort of flesh out not only sort of as you wove the access issues and how the politics and the stigma weave into that, but constantly bringing it back to sort of, it's a healthcare issue. It's access to a healthcare issue. And hopefully folks listening to this will feel a little bit more grounded in what it might actually entail for them. But again, two places to direct you to start that space of conversation, Action Canada. And what was the other one, Robin?
ChoiceConnect.ca, which is Shore Center. So that's Shore Center in Kitchener-Waterloo. They are the closest Planned Parenthood to London in terms of being a nonprofit in that space locally for us. And I did just want to end and say, like, I love the connection with ANOVA because I think another thing that we really need to talk about is reproductive coercion, which we've kind of danced around today. But that term, I want to just put it out there and name it, is whenever anyone is forced to carry a pregnancy they don't want, or forced to not be pregnant if they want to be. And that's where, like, the system is doing that to people. It's not just people in their life. It's that if you have to get to London for an abortion and you can't afford the flight from St. John's, Newfoundland, that's a problem. And that's coercion. And so that's something that for folks who say they're pro-choice, like, I want to push you a little bit at the end of this conversation and say, okay, what does that actually mean to you then? And how are you showing up? Because I'm hearing pro-choice as a very empty word these days. It feels like something that oftentimes politicians in particular will throw out there as saying we're not like the anti-choicers in the US in particular. And I've just told you that there are people from our community regularly having to fly to the US for 5 days for something that they should be able to get. So we need to fix that.
And what a call to action to end on. It reminds me so much around, you know, ally is not a status. It is an actionable thing. So what are we all doing then to actually increase the ability to make choices about our bodies? Thank you, Robin. This was wonderfully helpful.
Piece by Piece is a production of ANOVA, A Future Without Violence. ANOVA is on social media, and you can learn more about Piece by Piece and ANOVA at www.anovafuture.org. A reminder that if you need to talk, please call our 24-hour crisis and support line at 1-800-265-1576. Our sexual assault counselors are available for virtual appointments, and our shelters are open. We're here for you. A special thank you to Najee Naeemzadeh for technical production, Emma Richard for visual content creation, and music for this podcast is from the album Sweet and Joyful by Crowander, the track Humming. Music access, downloaded and used under Creative Commons license via freemusicarchive.org. See you next time.